You know, people occasionally turn around to me and say, what are your retirement plans? And the answer to that question is, ask me again on the 9th of September 2053, because that will be my 100th birthday. You never, ever stop learning.
If you put yourself in those difficult moments, it makes everything else seem relatively easier. Hey, great to see everybody or listen to everybody on Do Hard Stuff. And we got a really cool guest today. I've been checking up and I've seen him all over the place on LinkedIn. It's Chris Barrow. Chris, how are you?
Tremendously well. And I genuinely hope, I've got five adult children ages between 30 and 40. And I genuinely hope that they listen to a recording of this and find out after all these years that their dad is finally cool. Thank you, JW.
Well, Chris, I've got two ages 27 and 29, and I'm not going to be cool no matter what I do. So, yeah. they're still. I literally just took my son to Scotland with me last month on a business trip, and I thought I was going to get the cool stamp, and I still didn't get the cool stamp. I don't know how that happens.
No. Well, let me tell you a story. I was in a workshop in London last week with my clients, and we'll get into that in a minute. But my clients are all in the business of dentistry, and we had 130 delegates in the room, and I was sat at the back, and we had a guest speaker for the day, and I was sat at the back of the room with my my eldest daughter, who actually runs a marketing agency. She was in there for the day. And there were two things that she found hilarious. The first one was that I told her that I had a client call at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And she was amazed that just before the call, I got out the printed version of the email that the client had sent to me. She said, Dad, you're printing emails. What is wrong with you? And but whilst I was dealing with that, I opened my iPhone and I started typing the client's mobile number into the calculator on the iPhone.
she thought, Dad, you're going into a home very soon.
Exactly right. So if there are any listeners left at this point, I need you to know, I really do genuinely believe we're going to talk about some stuff that's going to be relevant to all demographics, but it might just be getting delivered to you by some guy who has become the Obi-Wan Kenobi of British dentistry, because I think that would be a fairly good way of describing me. Anyway, JW, I'm in your hands.
Well, great. Good kind of intro. I think it's always good. A little bit of levity and humility in our lives. I try to do the same, you know, every day when I wake up. But, well, let me introduce who you are. You've got 23 years of experience as a consultant, trainer, and coach in the UK dental world. You transitioned from the corporate sector to business coaching in 1993 and became one of the first UK students at Coach University. In 1997, you found the Dental Business School and developed a 12-month business coaching program for dental practice owners and teams, reaching over 1,000 UK practices in just 10 years. You are an advisor to the dental charity Bridge to Aid, which I believe does work in Africa. One of the most fascinating things, you're an explorer, having co-founded Seven Explorers, a bespoke exploratory remote travel and expeditionary organization. And you're a writer, author, coach, adventurer. Seriously, really cool, because we got a lot of cool stuff to talk about in that arena. So, yeah, interesting stuff there. And right now you have your primary business is Extreme Business, correct?
That's exactly right. And, you know, it's important, I think, for the listeners to understand that through all of that, I'm very much a freelancer. I work for myself. I have two team members who support me. I have a business manager and a marketing manager who support me. But it's been Planet Chris Population One in terms of delivering to the client base for the last, it's 31 years since the first dentist professionally crossed my path. And I've been very, very blessed by the fact that I've developed a niche within the UK and Irish dental marketplace. I've also had the opportunity of doing some lecturing overseas in dentistry as well, in India, South Africa, Australia, never in the United States of America for no reason. Just didn't happen
Well,
yet.
I guarantee you
Although
we're about to fix that. We're gonna get you in here. I got too
we'll
many
get there.
connections here. We're gonna find a good home for you here.
Well, we'll see. It's been great. And by the way, it's really important again for the listeners to understand that I'm not a dentist, and I am a former financial planner who moved into the coaching landscape in the 1990s, as you said in your intro. And so, what I've learned about dentistry, I've learned through the clients that I've worked with. But I've been really, really fortunate that I've ended up being able to work with some of the leading dental practices in particularly in the UK and Ireland, and it's great. I always like to use a kind of a football metaphor that I've played with some of the great teams in dentistry and some of the real competition winners, and that's been fantastic. And it's really colored my whole professional life. The best man at my wedding was a dentist. When I go out
Wow.
and do when I do crazy stuff, whether I'm running marathons or going off on adventures, I'm usually got dentists along with me. My whole social life is around dentistry. I've got two communities. I've got my immediate family and dentistry, and that's about it. I don't have any other friends. But you know what? They've turned out to be those dental people have turned out to be lifelong friends. I love them.
Well, it's interesting because you know this as well. Once you get into kind of the space of the dental industry, and I'm the same way, I've been 37 years into the dental space, you really just find out that yeah, it's kind of where your friendships are, it's kind of where your knowledge base is. So did you get into the dental base, the dental industry through the financial planning? Was that how you first kind of encountered it?
Yes, it was, and I'll make the long story short by saying that as a financial planner, I primarily grew my business through seminar marketing in the mid 1980s, and I was always able to do public speaking, and so used that ability to go out and sell my financial planning services during the 80s. I started working originally with dental technicians. I had a bunch of dental laboratories as clients in the late 80s, early 90s as a financial planner. And the bizarre story is that one of my dental laboratory clients rang me in 1993 and said, "Chris, we've got a bit of a problem that we need some help with. We have a dentist who has a lot of unpaid lab bills. And in fact, the quantum of those unpaid lab bills is massive. And back in 1993, we were talking £30,000. That was the price of a small house in those days. Dentists hadn't paid his lab bills. And so the dental laboratory owner said to me, "I've told the dentist that he's got two choices. I either put the debt collectors in or I put Chris Barrow in, my financial planner, to help him to sort his business out so that he can.
Wow.
So that he can pay my bills." So my first professional duty within the world of dentistry, I'm embarrassed to say, was kind of debt collection, because I knocked on the door of this guy. And by the way, it didn't take me very long to find out that not only did he owe the lab money, but he also owed the Inland Revenue money. He owed school fees that he hadn't paid. He owed everybody in town. And the guy was financially incompetent, and so he did at least have the good sense to let me in through the door. I worked with him. We managed to turn things around. I instilled some disciplines. I got my lab bill paid, so I became the lab owner, became the president of the Chris Barrow fan club, and but I also sorted the dentist out. Now, did my career then become debt collection for laboratories? No, that was just a strange start, but it was probably a couple of years later. I got a call one Saturday morning at home from a very, very prominent dentist in the northwest of England, who not only was a great clinician, but he also ran postgraduate courses. And he called me at home one Saturday and said, "Hi, Chris, my dental technician has told me I should talk to you about business coaching." And two things happened. Number one, he hired me and he was a center of influence. And number two, he also asked me to start lecturing on his postgraduate courses. And that, in a sense, was one of those turning points that we were talking about earlier, because that because I was lecturing on business on his postgraduate courses, this is 1996-7, that gave me the initial community. And that was the initial springboard that really got me into this. And to be fair, since then, JW, it's either been word of mouth, or it's been my own self-promotion, in the sense that I am public speaking, I am writing articles for my publications, I do run my own podcast, which is 8 years old now. And, you know, Chris Barrow's one of those guys, he'll turn up at the opening of an envelope. Anywhere there's anything going on in dentistry, I'll be there. And what I've done is that over that 27 years or so, I've become an overnight success.
Well, that's, well, wait a minute, back up. There's no such thing as an overnight success. There's a lot of hard work that goes into that. I always like what a friend of mine one time said, wow, you've been so lucky. And I thought, lucky? I don't think this guy was up till 2 o'clock in the morning when you were working and trying to make a deal happen and up the next morning already. So I'm not going to buy into your overnight success. Yeah. I think it's an evolution. But I do think it's interesting, me coming from a strong Christian background, I believe God puts us in these unique situations and also gets us the skill set or puts us in the right position. And, you know, you took financial planning to a very small niche, right? That most people wouldn't. Most people say, I want to be a financial planner to just businesses. But I think by focusing on in the dental sector, that's enabled you to be wildly successful. And I'll make the comment, whether you're in the UK or whether you're in the US, it's pretty common knowledge that most dentists, most people coming out of dental school, haven't had a lot of business courses, nor any understanding of how to operate a business. They're great. I was just on a call with a dentist, and they were saying, yeah, you know, we learn about all this stuff, but we don't learn how to run a business. So do you find that's very similar in the UK as well?
It is identical, and thank goodness in many ways, because you know, one of the things I'll make for clarity is that I moved away from the financial planning in 1997, and whatever financial planning practice was, I literally kind of gave it to a colleague and said, you run this because I'm going to go down this business coaching consultancy route, which is what I've been doing ever since. But to this day, you know, here we are all those years later, with graduates coming out of dental school, getting a couple of years, 2 or 3 years under the belt. I still get calls from relatively young dentists who are saying, I'm interested in taking my first steps onto the ownership ladder because maybe I've got that DNA code, that entrepreneurial itch. But then you get into a Zoom call with them and start talking to them about the reality of running a business, and you realize that they have no concept of what the, as you say quite rightly, there was no business course at dental school. And I understand why that is the case. They've got other fish to fry in dental school. But there's no business course, there's no business training. And so I'm one of those people who has identified that gap and have provided a solution. And it's interesting nowadays that the client base that I work with is a very broad spectrum. I've got people who are in startup situations. I've got people who have got very, very well established practices, but they may have hit a glass ceiling in terms of profitability and the growth of the practice. And of course, nowadays, because I've been around long enough, I've also got people that are looking at exit strategies and are saying, okay, I think I'm going to want to exit this business in 3, 5, 10 years time. And I want you to help me to polish the silver before we put the for sale sign up. So one of the great pleasures of the client community that I work with, I'm usually working with around about 100 dental businesses at any one time. And we've got a complete spectrum from starters to finishers and all the places in between as well. And what's beautiful about that in terms of my own client community is that as well as getting the coaching, as it were, top down from me, but I also encourage them to form very, very strong communal bonds with each other. And whether it's a WhatsApp group or whether it's regular workshops around the UK, that I moderate a WhatsApp group for my own my own business owners, and it's incredible to see the conversations that are going on within that WhatsApp group, which have got nothing to do with Chris Barrow, either because they're asking each other questions or that I simply don't know the answer to, because on the WhatsApp group, you know, I'm thinking of buying an intraoral scanner. What do people have got to say about that? I'm thinking of bringing in a new treatment modality. What have people got to say about that? So they're communicating sideways as well as top down from me. And that's a fantastic thing to see. But nobody, nobody, nobody ever stops learning. And you and I included, JW. And so absolutely, what happens is that I will get clients who have got 25-year-old dental practices that have been producing the goods financially and they've been producing the goods clinically for years and years, but they'll reach out to me and they'll say, do you know what? Let's think about things like digital workflow and the innovation that's taking place in that space at the moment. We don't want to get left behind. We want to be a part of a community like yours because we know that you and your community are going to be looking at what's next in dentistry. So there's no end to learning.
Yeah, I think there's two things I kind of get out of that is number one, a lot of what would be established practices where they, like you said, they've been rocking along for 20, 25 years and they're thinking, wow, we're just going to drift off in the sunset. And then technology overtakes them and maybe they haven't kept up. Maybe they haven't looked at the digital workflow. Maybe they haven't invested in a CBCT, whatever that looks like. Could be their marketing agendas, could be anything that they've done. I'm been in this long enough to remember in the US when companies started advertising in the early 90s, the local dentist would put an ad in on a billboard or something. They would say, oh, that's blasphemy. You know, you can't put ads out there. Are you crazy? And that's like, okay, everybody's doing it. So I think it's developing. But coming back full circle to what you were saying about businesses and not having a business acumen, I would say most dentists, they do their undergrad in one of the sciences, right? Chemistry, biology, and then they move into dental school. I really never took any business courses at all. And personally, I believe that's why we've seen such a dramatic rise with the DSOs. You're seeing that, well, the U.S. is quite far ahead than the U.K. in terms of consolidation. You're seeing that industry, massive consolidation, and now you're seeing that even more so in the U.K. And my belief is that dentists just don't want to run the practice, right? They would rather say, you know what? I'd rather have somebody handle all of that, the details for me. Let me just do dentistry. So it's created this vacuum where people are wanting to migrate towards this kind of managed system as well.
We're having this conversation at a very, very interesting moment in history in the British dental marketplace. And the reason for that is that in actual fact, DSOs in the United Kingdom are few and far between. There are not many DSO type organizations around. Now, I could spend 3 hours talking about the history of
that. There's some big ones though, right? I mean, there's some very large ones that are there as well. It's just not not a bunch of them.
The interesting thing is that the big dental corporates that exist in the United Kingdom, they're not DSOs. They are buying the practice lock, stock, and barrel. The owner is relinquishing the ownership. If you look at the top 20 dental groups in the United Kingdom, you will find that only one of them is actually a DSO. Only one. And the one that is a DSO is way down the ranking in terms of size. So what's happened in the last 25 years in the UK marketplace is that we've seen private equity firms and we've also seen large corporations that have come into dentistry and they have bought practices, portfolios of practices. The largest of those in the UK is owned by an asset management company and it's got about 650 locations. If you look at the top 20, they would range in size from about 650 down to probably about 100 locations, but all bar one are either institutionally owned by investors or they are owned by people like large insurance companies that want to cross-sell other products and services to the patient database. So the DSO model hasn't happened in the UK. And in fact, we've had 25 years where the mindset of the dental practice owner was sell it to a corporate. That's what everybody did. And in fact, when people reached out to me and said, I want to finish in 3, 5, 7 years, they were obsessed with the fact that they would sell to a corporate, that that corporate would take over ownership, and that they, the owner, would probably do a 5-year earn out, and that at the end of the earn out, they would then either finish or they would carry on as associates within their own practice. So that's been the model. DSO didn't happen. Now, the reason that we're at an interesting moment in history is because the bottom has fallen out of the dental corporate marketplace in the last 2 years in the UK, largely because 2 years ago, a lady called Liz Truss, who became Prime Minister for about 5 minutes, crashed the economy. Some of you may remember that. And as a result of Truss crashing the economy, we've just had 2 years of hyper inflation, high interest rates, and now we've had a change of government. And at the time we're recording this interview, we're waiting for our new government to deliver their first budget, and everybody's scared to death of what that's going to engage. But because the terms on which the corporates have been prepared to buy those practices have collapsed in the last 2 years, we've now got owners who are beginning to look at the DSO model for the very first time seriously. Now, it's not for me to tell you how to run your business, JW, but what I would be saying to you is that nobody's talking to them in the UK about DSO seriously. Nobody's got that going yet. The one corporate group that do offer a DSO model, they're out there and people know who they are, but their marketing is fairly quiet, and there's nobody banging on the head of the dentist and saying there is an alternative called a DSO. Isn't that incredible given what you guys have achieved around the rest of the world?
Yeah, so you're saying that, and it's interesting. It kind of comes under the header of DSO, right? Which is it's not true. It's just becoming under mass consolidation of a large corporate enterprise, really, of multiple practices. But you know, Chris, I think whether you look at the consolidation which we're talking about, or whether you're looking at the DSO, I think it all comes back full circle to the fact that a lot of dentists just don't want to run the business, right? I mean,
Correct.
they just don't want to run the business. They look at it and say, it's too much work. I don't want to do it. So that's fine. Here, pay me for my equity. I'll do an equity share for the next 5 years, and then you guys own the business. I was not aware of that. I was not aware that there was only one primary, real true DSO. And you're right. Now that I think about the ones that, and just disclosure, obviously, the majority of our, we got about 75 or so DSOs we work with in the US, but we've got 10 or 12 really good clients in the UK and Ireland as well, where we've been able to work with their dental practices and whatnot. But I think it still comes back around to the benefit of, if I want to come back to the title of the podcast, do hard stuff. That running a business is hard stuff, right? And a lot
Indeed.
of people don't want that part of it. They would just rather practice the dentistry piece.
I would say that in my communication with clients, whether it's through workshops or Zoom calls or face-to-face meetings, if we talk about the challenges they face, more than half my time is spent dealing with the challenges of the performance and behavior, either of clinicians or of team members. A significant proportion of my time, certainly in the UK at the moment, is dealt with the challenges of recruitment, because we have a clinical skill shortage in this country at the moment. It's very hard to find clinicians to even work. I would say that the third biggest problem is that they don't understand their own numbers. Even after all these years that I've been banging the drum on financial analysis, I'm still finding people who've been in business for years and haven't got a clue about the numbers. They're just like, let's work as hard as we can and see where we end up is still the approach. And then the final one, which is blatantly obvious, is marketing, which is that they don't understand internal marketing. They don't understand inbound marketing. Very often, the only thing that they understand is external advertising. They throw the money at agencies and then come to me somewhere down the line and say, we've been throwing money at an agency and we don't know what the return on investment is. And so I'm spending time trying to teach them internal and inbound marketing so that they can engage with their existing patient database in order to grow the business. And here I am, 31 years in, having just celebrated my 71st birthday,
Wow.
and busier than I've ever been in my life. And people occasionally turn around to me and say, "What are your retirement plans?" And the answer to that question is, ask me again on the 9th of September 2053, because that will be my 100th birthday, and I'll give you an answer. I'll give you an answer because there's so much to do in this community.
Yeah, no, I mean, and we talked a little bit about before we started just your energy, and I think that's I love to be around people because you feed off of people that have that same energy, but it's tough in a business world to kind of maintain that. And made me think of something when you were talking about the marketing piece. Now I'm looking at it very, very third party and very, very limited. You could add much more color and context, but as I look at even the UK market, I'm certain that there was majority of the practices that relied on the NHS system, and so they just had patients at the door, right? They didn't even worry about filling up a book. They opened the door, put the sign outside, and they were just busy. And as overhead has risen, and maybe the NHS payments haven't come up as they need to be. Now they're out there going, wait a minute, well, we got to get a little private pay in here as well. And so how do we market it? So a lot of this is foreign to them in terms of how do they make a profit and how do they make that transition? Maybe not fully out of the NHS system, but at least supplementing it with it. Is that a common problem you see?
It still is to this day, and the NHS dental system has been broken for about 25 years now. It's getting more broken over time as the population ages. There is no new money. The government have made it very, very clear. So we're trying to spread what is effectively the impact of inflation, of course, is that it's reducing the purchasing power of a fixed budget for NHS dentistry. And we also, again, go back to this clinical skill shortage that I was talking about. The media in Britain have done a fantastic job for independent private dentists because we have a phrase that every single person in this country understands, and the phrase is dental desert. And the term dental desert is used by the media to apply to those areas of the British Isles where no access to NHS dentistry is available because those practices that have got NHS contracts have got no clinicians and they've got no room to take on new patients. Now, the media have done a fantastic job of explaining that the majority of the British Isles is a dental desert. And there are two terminologies that are now bandied around in dentistry all the time. The first one is dental desert, and the second one, and I don't shoot the messenger because this may offend some of your overseas listeners, but the second phrase is turkey teeth. And what that means is people traveling to Istanbul from the United Kingdom to get whatever dentistry they can get done. Now, let me tell you, I've worked with some clinics in Istanbul that have been absolutely top of the game, but unfortunately, the people who are appearing on the media, having been to Istanbul for their dentistry, are ones that are sharing horror stories. So here's the scene: dental deserts, you can't get to see an NHS dentist. Turkey teeth, you can go to Istanbul and come back looking like a horse. And in the middle, we've got people that are living longer, that are living healthier, that want to look good and feel good, that want to be at whatever demographic they are, confident, when they smile on cameras and confident when they eat in public. And so we've got a fantastic marketplace. Let me share with you a statistic. There are around about 80 million people in Germany. And last year, 1 million dental implants were placed in Germany. We have around 67 million people in the United Kingdom. And last year, 200,000 dental implants were placed in this country. The United Kingdom is fourth from the bottom of the world league table of number of implants per head of population. And the dental implant marketplace in the United Kingdom hasn't even got going. And yet, only 15% of dentists in the UK have ever bothered taking any implant training whatsoever, and a very small proportion of that 15% are even placing those implants. So if you look at the implant market, if you look at the demographics, if you look at actually the fact that we are still an affluent country in the main, if you look at this gap in the marketplace between the NHS falling to pieces on one side and the corporates circling the wagons on the other side, there's a fabulous niche market which is called independent, private, owner-managed dental practice in the United Kingdom. And I'm very blessed to be sat in the middle of that niche, and I'm sharing with those people a message. And the message is that if you embrace digital workflow and if you embrace modern business practices, the sky is the limit. That's why I cannot retire. There's too much work to do.
That's amazing that there's only 15% or actually even been through the training. When you look at the vast size of it, because look, we're all privy, we're all the media pushes it, your smile is important, and that's becoming universal. I mean, probably has been more prevalent in the US. People want to have the cosmetic dentistry and the vanity from the teeth, et cetera. But you're seeing that worldwide, and you do hear more about it. I hear people going to Turkey for the dental work, and it's very common. So you're right. I think this bottom line, it creates such an opportunity in the UK market for cosmetic dentistry, for the implants that as you know, the all on fours that you're going to see being able to take place in the dental market. So, well, it's fascinating to me because while they do parallel, there is some massive differences in the US dentistry. We don't have the NHS systems. We don't have any of that kind of support. It's all basically done through private or medical healthcare clinics for the poor or the indigent. So there's a big, vast, big gap. Hey, well, switching gears just a bit, you've mentioned it about running marathons. You've also done, you're quite adventurous, right? And I consider myself quite adventurous, and I've done a bunch of stuff. But tell me about what are some of your recent adventures?
Okay, well, yes, I have 34 marathons under my belt, and I have to say, after a 5-year gap, the last marathon I ran was in 2020. The medal's up on the wall next to me, and the part of the reason that number one, of course, COVID got in the way, but also back in 2020, I picked up Achilles tendinopathy, and of course, that takes a while to recover. So I'm kind of in a place now where I've got the marathon itch. I'm chasing number 35, although I don't know when that's going to take place. Although I am doing a half marathon in Italy in 2 weeks from now, just as part of my kind of recovery process. But whilst the physio was saying no marathons for a while, I decided to get back on my road bike, which is another thing that I'm very keen on. So I have cycled Land's End to John O'Groats. So that's from the very, very south to the very, very north of the United Kingdom. Land's End is right at the bottom on the southwest, and John O'Groats is right at the top on the northeast. It's a 1,600 kilometer bike ride.
Is
And
that the in the north? That's still in England, or are you talking about up in
no,
Scotland as
that's
well?
right in the very north of Scotland. It's the last place before you fall into the sea. and so that's about 1600 kilometers. And in fact, I've done that twice. So now over here, we call that end to end. That's the name of the ride. And so I've done that twice. So I went up. And then a few years later, I came back down again. I've also done a thing which is called the Hebridean Way. Now, off the west coast of Scotland, there is a chain of islands, and they are called the Hebrides. And those islands are connected by ferries, and there's a very famous bike ride.
Yeah, yeah, which is, I've seen, yeah.
Yeah, so there's a big famous bike ride, which is called the Hebridean Way, which is to go from one end of the island chain to the other. And then another thing that I did, actually, literally about a month ago, over in Wales, we have an area which is called Snowdonia. And the reason for that is because Mount Snowdon is the highest mountain in Wales. And so I've just come back from a week of mountain biking over the mountains there. But probably over the years, I've done all sorts of crazy stuff. Everest Base Camp. I didn't climb Everest. And the reason I didn't climb Everest is because with five children, you don't take a 1 in 6 risk of death. So Base Camp was fine. I've done Kilimanjaro. I've also climbed the highest mountain in Italy. It's called Gran Paradiso. And that was probably the scariest thing I've ever done in my life. Once I've done it, that was me done. I'm finished with mountains. And also a desert adventure. The Empty Quarter is the largest uninhabited desert in the world. It straddles the border between Saudi Arabia and Oman. It's 1,000 miles or 1,500 kilometers of nothing. And wow. And had the great fortune to do a desert expedition over there and spend some time wild camping in the desert, which was a remarkable experience. But probably the one thing that in some respects I'm most proud of is that about 11 years ago, I was just coming up to my 60th birthday, and I saw that one of the TV stations over here was advertising for volunteers to take place in a celebrity, not celebrity, in a reality survival show. And it was a show that was being organized by a fella called Bear Grylls. Now, I don't know whether you know Bear Grylls over
here. Oh, we all know Bear here in the US. Yeah, he's very famous.
Excellent. Okay, okay. So it was decided that Bear Grylls would get involved in a television series that was called The Island with Bear Grylls. And the concept was to take a group of people who didn't have any survival skills training and to drop them onto an uninhabited island in the Gulf of Panama and to leave them there for a month and to see how they got along. And by the way, listeners, certainly as far as the UK is concerned, you can still pick that up on Amazon Prime, The Island with Bear Grylls. Now, season one was 13 British guys that were dumped onto a desert island to see how they would get along. It's not an elimination. There's no voting, no nothing. It was just survival. And I was very fortunate to be one of those 13 guys that appeared on that very, very first season of that TV series, which subsequently
ran. Is it actually the first episode of the first season?
The first season was 6 episodes, and that was us. And
wow.
And so I was one of those 13 guys. We were dropped onto an island, which was about 3 hours out from Panama City by fast boat. And they dropped us on the island with 24 hours water, no food, no fishing gear, no magnifying glasses, just a first aid kit. And we had cameras and mics. And they turned that into a 6-part reality documentary series. And we're very proud of the fact that in 2013, that show won what's known as a BAFTA, and that's the British Academy of Film and Television Awards. It's kind of like a British Oscar. And we got the BAFTA award in 2013 for the best original reality TV show. There you go.
Well, I'm actually looking on this. It's on Prime Video, and I think episode 1 has a picture of you.
There you go.
It looks to be.
So spoiler alert, I survived, and it was an incredible experience. Again, don't even get me started on the metaphors that were involved in that. By the way, I'm about I'm about 74 kilos as a marathon runner and a cyclist, and I was down to about 60 kilos within about 10 days.
Wow.
We had no food. We were
Ten
on two.
days, 10 days.
Yeah, we had nothing to eat. We had 200 calories a day. We were eating snails and coconut for about the first 2 weeks
Did
before
you
we
end up getting
managed to.
sick out of all that?
No, just dehydrated, malnutrited, and
Was
covered in bites.
Bear nearby the whole time? Was
Of course not.
He wasn't surviving anything.
No,
I've lost all confidence in Bear.
the premise of the show was that he was going to drop us on the island and then pick us up a month later, and that's exactly what he did. But we were left to our own devices. And listen, there was a medical team that was like 20 minutes away by fast rib, and we had a couple of walkie-talkies. So, if somebody fell out of a tree and broke a leg or whatever, it was, there was
Had emergency way out.
An evac, but other than that, we were left to ourselves. And obviously, you learn a lot about yourself in a situation like that, and you learn a lot about teamwork in a situation like that. But I think the most important thing that you learn, and certainly, the biggest takeaway that I came away with was to just be grateful for the blessings that we have. And so, traffic jams and delayed flights don't bother me in the slightest.
No. It's interesting. I don't have your resume. I guess I've got 12 years to catch up. I don't think I can catch up. I don't think I can do those long ones. I did do Everest Base Camp a couple of years ago, and somebody asked me, it was 2022, said, "Why didn't you go all the way to the top?" I said, "Because I can't. I mean, I don't want to even, right? I'm like, if you even understand altitude at 5,500, 5,300 meters, you start going, no, I'm not going another 2,000 meters. That doesn't even make no logical sense, right?" But I think, and so one of the reasons I started this podcast, Do Hard Stuff, definitely about business, because I think business is hard. It's not as easy as people make it out to be. But my personal opinion is, my wife and I have done some Ironman. She still regularly runs marathons. I do regular half marathons. That's about it for me. But I think if you're always trying to push your limits, if you're always trying to make yourself stretch beyond what you think your body or your mind can take, it makes everything else so much easier. It makes dealing with controversy at work or overcoming traffic or maybe a silly little financial issue or whatever it is, if you'll put yourself in those difficult moments, it makes everything else seem relatively easier. And I'm sure you would probably concur with that.
100%. I can tell you, it's much tougher to eat 200 calories a day for 10 days than it is to sit in a traffic jam. And equally so, I'm going to go off on a bit of a sidebar, but one of the things that I've just finished reading is Meditations for Mortals by Oliver Berkman. And I'd already read 4,000 Weeks. I was familiar with his material, but Meditation for Mortals, I've got to say, is a wonderful, wonderful book. And spoiler alert, which is that you're never going to get in box zero, so stop chasing it and stop worrying about it, because it's a false summit. There's nothing there.
Man,
And I
go ahead.
Sorry. And I have to say, I mean, my God, I'm probably just like you, JW. I've actually got a storage unit full of books that I've read, let alone a library at home. And we're because we are, generally speaking, engaged with the personal development movement. You've read book after book after book after book. We were joking earlier before we came on air about the fact that we were listening to gurus in the 1990s who were educating us through cassette tapes in our cars. Nowadays, we've got online training and learning and so on. You never ever stop learning. And little did I realize just a couple of months ago that when somebody waved a copy of Meditating for Mortals at me and said, read this book, and I go, here we go again, another personal development book. But actually, as soon as I read the first chapter, I thought, wow, this guy's got a message to share. And I would recommend it to your listeners. And it's about, who am I to summarize Oliver Berkman? But it's about being at peace with the world that we live in. And it's a crazy world. It's a very demanding world. It's a world which, even in our lifetimes, we've seen change beyond description. You know, one of the most incredible things I've ever seen in my whole 71 years on the planet was to see that SpaceX booster land back on that gantry on TV. Was it last week? And or the week before, within the last 14 days. And I stood and watched that on TV. And the only thought that was going through my mind is that I feel so blessed that I've lived long enough to see mankind be able to do that.
Yeah.
Because I cannot even begin to fathom the technology that has gone into that. But the one thing that I do know is that it is technology that has been created by inspired men and women. It's not been created by AI.
Interesting you talk about that Meditation for Mortals. I just finished a book called Redeeming Your Time. And his whole book is about getting rid of the fluff and getting focused on what's important. And then just not getting, because I still get a little anxiety if I look and I go, oh, I got 182 emails I need to run through. But the reality of it is they'll be there tomorrow if I need to go do something with my wife, or I've been married 30 years now. And so, you know, I've got to learn to prioritize that. And you're right. You've gave me two new quotes. One was Mailbox Zero. I've never heard that, not put in that terminology. And then earlier you said you would go to the opening of an envelope. So, we definitely have those two things going for us. I would go to the opening of an envelope for sure. I'm like, my wife is always like, no, I'm not going. I'm going, well, I'm going. And, funny story. I was, my 60th birthday is next year, March. And I was telling my wife what I was going to do. She says, do what you want to. So I started, you know, I'm actually going to do the Annapurna Trail. She's not going. I'm going to do that with a friend. And then we're going to come back. I said, hey, we'll meet in Italy. We'll bring the kids over. We're going to make this long trip. And I said, hey, in May, I think it's the 4th, is the Prague Marathon. I think I'm going to run in that at the end of it. Let's do it together. And she goes, don't sign me up for that. No. What are you talking about? She said, you're going to go do all that, and we're going to be in Italy with the family. And you think I'm going to go run a marathon? And so, you know, that's where my adventurous kind of gets me in trouble. But luckily I've got a wife who will reel me in on many occasions as well.
There's a great quote in the Daily Stoic today, interestingly enough. And by the way, the Ryan Halliday's book, Daily Stoic, I reread it every year without fail. And today's quote, and I'm paraphrasing the quotation, but it says, you know, next time you run a marathon, just answer the question, are you actually running towards something or are you running away from something? Great quote. And, you know, some people run marathons to run away from things. They don't want to face the reality of the situation that they're in, so they're running as an anesthetic.
Wow. And
some people run marathons because they're running towards something, and they're running towards the achievement of a goal and the way that it's going to make them feel in the other areas of their life. Isn't that a great quote just to ponder for a minute?
Yeah. Yes. Say that quote again.
So if you decide you're going to run a marathon, ask yourself the question, are you running towards something or are you running away from something?
Wow. Yeah. Good point. Yeah.
You know, a lot of these people are at the gym at 4 a.m. in the morning and doing all this thing. Some of those people are running away from things. And of course, it ain't going to work. You know, when you finish the marathon, whatever it was you were running away from, it'll still be there.
Still there.
So deal with it. Deal with it, because then you can invest your marathon time in running towards things, and the thing might be the next goal.
I'll have to say I'm definitely not running away from stuff. I'm trying to see if my while you're sitting there at 74 kilos, I'm at about 102, 103, and so for me to run a for me to run anything, I've got a you know, my wife's doing it at probably 55 kilos and in kilograms, and here I am going, okay, I'll do it. So I'm just like, I'm just trying to finish, right? My goal is just to finish. So, well,
By the way,
listen, if yeah, go ahead.
Let me just say one thing in the interests of humility, perhaps. I'm doing a half marathon over in Italy in 2 weeks' time, and I'm actually running the marathon with two of my five kids, and another one of my kids is going to be at the finish line. So let me tell you that the reason what I'm running towards in my half marathon in Lake Maggiore is the fact that my daughter, I've just done Sober October. And on the 3rd of marathon, on the 3rd of November, sorry, I've told my daughter that I'm running towards a pint of Italian beer.
Now,
That's going to keep me going.
that might get me enough to fly over and meet with you. I might do it together. That's enough to. If you told me we were going to finish in Dublin and are we going to go to the Guinness factory and have a couple of pints of Guinness, I'd probably be all in. So, well, listen, Chris, if somebody wants to get a hold of you, I believe it's coachbarrow.com. Is that right?
Easy as coachbarrow.com.
Coach and then Barrow.com. Look, it's been a pleasure. This has been a lot of fun. We went way longer than I usually go, but the inform you know, this really had two purposes. I think we talked a little bit about the UK market and what dentists are facing, and then we also got to have some fun and also talk about what I say is do hard stuff. You know, don't be afraid to stretch and do something that you're not able to do. I've got a really good friend of mine, probably 12 years ago. He was weighing about 350 plus pounds. His daughter had gotten cancer, and he ended up getting into real adventurous, and he just said, I was going to change his lifestyle. This year alone, he ran seven marathons in 6 months,
Well.
The first part of this year. And he's climbed Mount Elbrus in Russia, Kilimanjaro. He's doing Annapurna Trail with me in the spring. And I think sometimes you just got to say, hey, why not, right? You just got to. It's a little bit of a mindset.
Indeed. And thank you for having me on the show. It's been an absolute pleasure.
That was great. And well, I'm sure we're going to do this again. We may do a whole segment on just the island. That might be fun as well. So, hey, thanks everybody for jumping in and listening. This was really, really great. Coach Chris Barrow, we appreciate having you on, and we look forward to doing it again. So, everybody have a fantastic week.